All right. It is December 12th, 2015, and this is an interview with Joe Rinardi. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
All right. So we're going to spend a little time talking about your work today. Let's start off, hopefully, simple. And what is your job title and for whom do you work?
My job title is CEO, and I work at a company called CenterX.
And what does CenterX do?
CenterX provides e-prescribing and other electronic pharmacy services to the providers of prescription drug therapies.
And by providers, do you mean?
By providers, I mean anyone who is responsible for ordering prescription drugs for those courses of therapy, and then anyone who's involved in the dispensing of those drugs, and anyone who's involved in providing financial access to those dispensed prescription drugs. So insurance companies, pharmacies, and doctors would be the easiest way to group those.
All right. And how long have you been there?
Just over 6 years.
And what is your, as CEO, I know that you do a fair amount of travel, but when you're at home in Madison, what is a typical day or work like, or week like? So just like your schedule or the way that your days work.
So usually I try to prepare for my week on a Sunday afternoon or evening, try to get my schedule lined out and a rough semblance of what the main priorities are going to be for that week. Usually means taking a list of tasks that's been already set aside for me, things that are still left in my email from the previous week, and try to narrow it down to a list of practical things that can be accomplished based on the amount of travel or meetings that might be on my calendar. Usually by Sunday, most of my week is, we'll say from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m., most of my days are pretty fully booked. So I'm usually looking to slot out maybe a total of 4 hours throughout the week to get something done that's not already, 4 hours that are not already scheduled for some other purpose that I can use to get a couple of things accomplished for the end of the week. Anything that I can't figure out how to do by myself within that time frame, I have to plan out to whom I can delegate the different tasks. And then that pretty well locks in each of the days of that week. I usually wake up about 7 a.m., dial into a conference call, finish getting ready for work, walk to work, usually while on another conference call, and get to the office somewhere between 8 or 9, depending on how appropriate it is for me to be walking while on certain conference calls. And then it's generally a matter of hopping from phone call to phone call throughout the course of the day if I'm in Madison, with people trying to snag 5 minutes here or there in between phone calls. Or while I try to walk from my office to the bathroom or from my office to the kitchen. That's a pretty typical day. And then it usually wraps up somewhere around 4 or 5 p.m. with the meetings and the conference calls, and then I can spend a couple of hours catching up on email or trying to get some other tasks done. The goal is usually to try to take all incoming communication and get it down to a point where there's not accumulating tasks piling up on any given day. Usually Monday or Tuesday, I can get my schedule back on track to within maybe 10 or so extra surplus tasks that weren't previously expected. And then it's usually about 10 or so tasks each day that get added to the accumulating pile. And then Saturday is usually where I make up for the 50 or so tasks that have accumulated over the course of the week.
All right. That sounds intense. Do you wish that you had put your office closer to the kitchen or the bathroom?
No, I don't.
All right. How many people work for CenterX?
There are currently 16 people who work primarily for CenterX and have really no other source of income. There are probably close to 20 to 25 people that are, that have taxes withheld for them at some point throughout the course of a year. So are in some way contracted with or consulting with the company.
Got it. And what do you think are the best and the worst parts of running a company?
Huh. I think if I can imagine that my experience is at all like the general experience of running a company, I would say that the best parts of running a company are that any of the successes and victories of the company are something that you get to feel in a very real way, not just observe and not just witness, but you get to feel like you're a part of it. The worst parts, definitely the amount of, I would say, stress is the default word, but it's probably not really stress. It's actually, I would say, concern. As opposed to just working for a company or being a manager or a boss at a company, where your job is to protect the company and to do what the company needs to do, and you know, to make a product or provide a service or provide guidance or education or any of those things to other coworkers or to customers. When you're actually in charge of the whole company, concern gets very personal for every person that's involved with the company. So at the end of the day, you might think, oh, this didn't go quite the way it was supposed to. If you're not in charge of the whole company, you can maybe say, oh, I didn't have a good day, or I didn't do everything the right way. Everything wasn't perfect. But that's okay. You know, I'll pick it up tomorrow. Everybody makes mistakes. When you're in charge of the whole thing, every mistake feels like it's possibly putting everybody else at the company at risk. And maybe if the company is more substantial and more stable than CenterX, my hope is that type of a feeling or that anxiety goes away over time. But that's definitely the worst part about it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of stuff leading up before you worked here prepared you for this? What kind of roles or other kind of responsibilities you might have had or experiences in your prior?
Yeah, at one point I've probably done a calculation of the number of different companies that I've worked for, or different businesses that I've worked for, different people who have basically authored my paycheck on a regular basis. And it's some ridiculous double digit number. It's probably fewer than 30 jobs that I've had in my life, but it's definitely more than 20. And something that's pretty common among my experiences in all of those places, I seem to enter every job, want to learn everything I possibly can about it, and I tend to form very strongly held opinions about how things should be done at any one place. And while that's not all by itself all that particularly useful, and it doesn't make for making friends, it seems to put me in a position of leadership in a lot of jobs that I've held, whether that was the job that I was hired for or not. I think a lot of workplaces, you know, leadership is something that anyone can sort of volunteer or step into it, unless it's probably overly militaristic and where there's a defined chain of command and process for everything. All of the jobs I've ever held have been pretty open-ended, and people have pretty much allowed me to do whatever it is that I think needs to be done. So I've had, pretty much in every place that I've ever worked, I've had some sort of a leadership role where I was in charge of not just a project, but also other people's activities on that project. You know, people would basically say I was a manager at every other job that I've ever held, performing performance reviews and giving guidance to other employees, people that would say, you know, reported to me. My most recent job before CenterX was at Epic, and that kind of changes the names and the titles and the way people view those traditional mechanisms. They claim to have no managers. They claim to be a flat company. So that's why I use obscure words to describe leadership. But I think having those experiences where I'm leading other people in various different settings has prepared me best for being able to do this at CenterX. It's not inconsequential that over half the people at CenterX previously worked at Epic, so that also probably prepared me pretty well for it's a particular type of person, and it's a particular type of culture that comes out of Epic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think you're the same person at work as you are outside of work? Or to put that in a slightly different angle, is there anything about who you are at work that you think would surprise people who don't know you from there, being family members, stuff like that?
Yeah, I think, well, at this point, I think the majority of our family members have seen me in the work environment, but I think that it's probably surprising to all of them when they see it in the first couple of times. You and I worked together a long, long time ago, and I was a very different person then than I am now. So I wonder whether it would be similar or different if you were to see me at work now versus then. I would say that I'm more of a different person now than I was 10 years ago, than I was 15 years ago, than I was 20 years ago, than I am a different person between work and home.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that people would be rather surprised to see the differences between how I behave when I'm at work and when I'm at home. But I think also, and maybe this isn't such a great thing, but there's a significant difference in how I behave when I'm at home versus when I'm at my office versus whenever there are people around me in a work setting who are not my coworkers. So my coworkers see something that's probably a lot more similar to what my family sees, as opposed to other people that I meet in a professional context who are not my coworkers.
And what would surprise people about that professional context, the non-coworker, not the people furthest from you?
I think the professionalism. I think the pace of my speech, the amount of reservation that I hold to what I say versus what I think. If I'm around others in industry, they would be surprised to hear that I have a short fuse, that I have strongly held feelings that I articulate verbally, sometimes vulgar, sometimes in a vulgar way. Most people in the professional setting, or people who have only met me in a professional setting and not as my coworkers, would be shocked to learn any of that. I think they would also be shocked to learn that I tend to be someone who likes banter and goofing around quite a bit when I'm not in a professional setting. I would think that most of those professional people think of me as being kind and intelligent and quiet and relatively dull. and I don't think that my coworkers or my family would necessarily use any of those four words to describe me in the first 10 words that they would use to describe me.
And so with regard to your company then and to your office environment internally, what is the tone? Do you find yourself trying to balance those things, or do you like the tone to be one way or another, or kind of the company culture, so to speak?
I actually wish that I wish that my tone around my coworkers and my attitude around my coworkers was something that was more consistent with the tone and attitude that I set and project with professional contexts that are not my coworkers. And to a large extent, I wish that I could carry that into my personal life. I think that I'm more careful and more thoughtful about it, and I'm more aware of it when I know I'm being watched, when I know it matters what people think. I tend to have a general attitude in life that I don't care what other people think. When I'm representing Centerx, I very much care what other people think, and I actually wish I could move that into all aspects of my life a little bit more.
Talking about some of the other professional stuff that you do, what are some professional, I know that you're part of this NCPDP. Are there other professional organizations or industry things that you are part of, that you participate in?
Yeah, there are actually a lot of them. NCPDP is a standards organization, so it's a collaborative nonprofit organization that attempts to bring different companies that are competitors in all capitalist senses of the word together with government programs like Medicare and Medicaid to establish communication standards so that these businesses, which are competitive with each other but also have mutual clients who are competitive with each other, so that they can communicate interoperably among them in order to make technology useful and to allow us to operate. There are other organizations. NCPDP is the National Council for Prescription Drug Programs, which is pretty distinctly and sometimes grotesquely an American creation, whereas technology isn't an American-dominated field. So there are other standards organizations like HL7, which is an international organization, does things very differently, though they pretend to do them the same way. Or I should say NCPDP pretends to do things the same way as HL7. HL7 actually existed well in advance, and its primary purpose was really more for clinical healthcare content, and it wasn't specifically prescription drug programs. There's also ASAP, which is a similar organization, but it was started and is still mostly attended by retail pharmacists, independent pharmacists. And there are kind of another probably dozen or so of these similar organizations that we pay dues to and we are members of. And largely we take less of an active participatory role in them, but we're members and we monitor the changes that happen within those organizations, and we subscribe to their services so that we know what's going on in the industry.
Do you appreciate the role of those organizations, or do you feel like it's kind of something that everybody just has to do to be, like once it gets going, then everybody has to?
We need the organizations. The organizations are, if nothing else, they provide a reason for all of these companies and businesses to come together, and to communicate somewhat in the open. It's not entirely open to the public. But these companies wouldn't have an open discussion with more than two participants if they didn't have any sort of forum like these. I think the organizations themselves tend to move frustratingly slowly. They tend to be laden down with a lot of bureaucracy and veiled messaging. It's like interpreting the Federal Reserve when they make a statement. They're very muted statements, and then people key in on one or two little words, and they're reading between the lines, and it has the power to shift markets in a severe and drastic way. These standard organizations are kind of very similar in that regard. Companies are making semi-public statements, and everybody is reading between the lines to figure out what those companies are planning to do strategically. So it's not particularly productive. It's frustratingly slow. It's not nearly as innocent and altruistic as the organizations seem, or as their charter statements seem, or as their mission statements seem. But it serves a purpose, and it is the mechanism through which we as an industry move forward. And for that reason, I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. If there was one thing, like if you could have one, make one thing change within the, like flip a switch and something would be different in the way that the industry works. And I'll just use that term broadly because you'd have to define it for the purposes of the question. You'd have to define it yourself, I guess. So if there was one thing that you could kind of flip a switch and change in the environment and industry that you work within, what would it be?
I'm not entirely positive. I think that if there was one thing I could do, I would find a way for at least the current mechanism, structure, and reason behind the current mechanism and structure for how healthcare is provided to primarily Americans, because our system is so different from everywhere else. I would want that information to be made available and understandable to every person who has to participate in it, who needs healthcare. It's ridiculously complicated, and just understanding the level of complication would I think help the industry to hopefully back out of some of that level of complication and maybe get back to something that would be able to move more quickly, that would be able to adapt. There's a lot of technology in healthcare. Technological advancements over the last 150, 20, 10, 5 years. Technology is now moving way faster than the bureaucracy can move, and that's I think the biggest shame of how we're doing it right now.
Did you say that you think even if people just understood that it was, that there was a level of complication there, that would make a difference?
Yeah, I think that there's this expectation that because healthcare doesn't seem all that complicated. You know, you pick a doctor, you go to the doctor. Because healthcare doesn't necessarily always seem that sophisticated. We still use paper records. We still use antiquated scheduling systems and payment systems. And health insurance doesn't look all that particularly sophisticated. Because it doesn't look sophisticated, because it doesn't look modern, I think people think that it's not that complicated. And more specifically, I think they have an expectation that, okay, after about 15 minutes of somebody telling me something, after 5 minutes of watching a TED talk on something, I should be able to have a pretty good grasp of it. I'm a smart person. And it's just, you can barely scratch the surface on it. I mean, there are these other concepts that are out there these days that if you spend 10,000 hours on something, you'll be an expert in it. I think healthcare is one of those things where you can spend 10,000 hours on it and you're still nowhere near being an expert on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. So, all right. Are there other things about your work, or your particular role that, you wish people knew or understood?
No, not that I can immediately think of.
Okay.
I guess I wish that people had a way to have their curiosity satisfied without needing to ask. So are there particular things that I wish people knew? No. But I guess I wish there was an easier way for people to know the answers to their questions. In other words, I think it's different for each person in terms of what they might be curious about. And it's really, really difficult for me to unwind an answer when people ask what should be a relatively simple question. I kind of pause and I get stuck because I start thinking about how long of an answer is this going to be before I can get them to have an understanding. And that's not just me. That's not just how slow and deliberate I am with communicating those types of thoughts. It really is incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of different jobs. I've had other jobs for a long period of time, and it should say something that I could more easily tell somebody how a diaper is made, which if anyone has ever seen that thing, I mean, there are huge workforces of people and years of engineering and technology that go into how a diaper is made. And yet I could explain that to somebody so much more quickly than I could explain to somebody how their prescription drug gets to them.
Mm-hmm. Like you need the 10,000 hours to answer the question.
Right. Right.
So, all right. Well, here's something you can answer. What do you usually do for lunch?
I would say I usually walk over to the coffee shop next door to the office and get a pint of soup and then eat that at some point throughout the day. It's probably the second most common scenario for my lunches that I don't eat it.
Yeah. All right. Then second to last question is, what elements of your upbringing specifically, so less your past professional things, but your upbringing and maybe particularly from mom and dad, what elements of that has shaped you as the professional that you are?
I have, for the last 15 or so years, pretty much identified myself and really adapted and defined who I am based on my work. And not just mom and dad, but I would say from the example of our siblings, our in-laws, from mom and dad, from what we know of mom and dad's parents and their family lives, it's something that I'm not very self-aware of, but every job that I've had in the last 10, 15 years, if you look back at my performance reviews, if you look back at my exit interviews, if you look back at the roasts, and you look back at the exit conversations and the friends that I've made along the way, and even some people don't look at this very well or with a very positive light, but people will say with a regular basis, where in the heck do you get your work ethic from? And we kind of make a joke about it because of the nature of my current job, which is that we're in an industry that is not at all competitive, and we are a 20-person company trying to compete with a company that's been established and has effectively had a monopoly for the last 10 years. It's very easy for people to make a visual image for themselves or to answer that question on their own. And they say, where do you get this work ethic from? What motivates you to do this? And it's very easy from an outside perspective to say, well, clearly you're just motivated by revenge and anger, and that's what's driving you to do what you're doing. And there's a strong feeling of a sense of justice that does drive what I want to do, just doing what I'm doing, because I see it being done the wrong way. I see people incident to it, and I see injustice in the process, and that motivates me. But that really isn't where the work ethic comes from. The work ethic comes from that example. The work ethic comes from several families and several generations of people who are working hard so that their family can eat, so that their family can have a better education, a better opportunity, and a better lifespan and a better quality of life than they had for themselves. And that's something that I feel like I've learned from our family.
Yeah. All right. Well, for our closing question then, I actually just wanted to go back. I know one thing that Mom has voiced interest about before is I'd like to just see if you can think of and list as many of those prior 20 to 30 jobs that you've had, just in going through the different...
Oh, good Lord. obviously, working at Mike's Town and Country, there's a certain amount of babysitting that we did. Working at Cousin Subs. There were a couple of other little jobs in high school that I'm not entirely recalling. At Michigan Tech, I was a custodian for the campus for some of the buildings for a while. I worked at the media production studio. I worked at the Center for the Performing Arts there, the Rosé Center, in a technical capacity, in a stage technician capacity. I've worked at a number of, I guess you could call them restaurants in Houghton. They're not, whether it's a bar or a coffee shop or a bookstore or a restaurant, it sometimes changes by the hour. and then a lot of Kimberly-Clark iterations, which spans a couple of different titles throughout 5 years. And then primarily it was Epic and then CenterX.
All right. Cool. I think that's it. Thank you.